Welcome to a new edition of The Brand Called You. Today, it is my privilege to introduce Veera Garg, who is a lead teacher at the American Embassy School. She's a well-known historian. Veera, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Veera is a bachelor's in arts, master's in arts, MPhil from JNU, MEd in Michigan, and my God, she's got all kinds of qualifications. Veera, tell us a little bit about your early career.
So you said I'm a bachelor in arts, but I would have preferred if you said bachelor's in arts for history,
okay,
because I've done BA, MA in history, MPhil in history too. And then I was writing my PhD, but I didn't finish it. I got married and then moved to Calcutta from Delhi. I was at JNU. So when we moved to Calcutta, I got a job in a school called South Point School. And it was very interesting. I was looking to teach in college, but that was the job available. And each class had 100 students, and it was like a factory system. So it reminded me of what I didn't want to do as I grew in my teaching career. But then I was fortunate to get a job at St. Xavier's College in Calcutta and later at Loreto College. And so I started my teaching career in college and university.
Okay, so, you know, you're a recognized historian, and let's talk a little bit about history. As a recognized historian and done an incredible amount of research, why is understanding history so important for each one of us?
I mean, this is something I really want to educate people in India about. History, if you don't know history, you don't know anything. It's like a leaf that doesn't know the tree that it belongs to. And so history provides us with a sense of identity, but it also explains our origins to us, like a tree without roots otherwise. Mm. So just like we need to know our roots and we need to understand where we came from. And recently I've in fact started doing history walks just for people who are interested. In Delhi, I do the Mehrauli area and Purana Kila, Old Delhi, Humayun's tomb, just so that people understand their past and heritage. So it's really important. I think history is kind of the all-encompassing subject. I do a hard sell for history, being a historian, but really most other subjects history would cover, you know, unless even sciences, unless you know the history of science, you don't understand the sciences. So history is very important.
So, you know, at the time when you were coming out of college, the preferred career for people who had excelled in academics like you did were the civil services, and you decided to choose academics. What made you choose this?
Some of it was circumstantial. It became easier, you know, in the civil services, you get married and you get posted in different places. And with my parents, I always saw, my father was in the government too, but my mother moved whenever my father moved, and I didn't want a situation where one lived separately. And in my youth, I was very idealistic and I did believe in, you know, change from within and reform from within. But then I thought, I've gotten to education, maybe I can do change there. So
Very interesting. You know, over the years, you have taught at school and at high school and at college. What are some of your key differences and challenges that you faced in these institutions?
So teaching in college was very challenging. I had to be on my toes all the time. I had to keep reviewing and revising new historiography. But it's impersonal. You know, you're at St. Xavier's College. I remember I used to kind of stand on a stage and there were maybe 150 students, no idea who they were. There was no personal contact. When I started teaching at high school, then you get involved in students, in their lives, in their beliefs, in their passions, and you develop a one-on-one relationship. So definitely school teaching is far more rewarding.
Very interesting. So one more question before I move to your current employer, American Embassy School. You know, you have always taught children or students in their late teens. And these days, everyone's talking of millennials. You've been watching people of that age group all along. How have these young people over the years influenced you And how are millennials changing the world today?
So I always say, I feel like I'm a teacher, but I learn every day from my students. And young people are amazing today. I feel when we were growing up, we didn't have the kind of integrity, honesty, value system that a lot of children have today. Firstly, a concern for the environment. They're very, you know, they don't waste plastic, they don't use plastic, they're constantly conscious of the environment. And this is not all, but maybe I've been lucky, but the students I've come across, some of them have been amazing. They are passionate, they are passionate for a cause, they further it. And of course, with students, the more they do, the more they can do. So it's the same group of students who do incredible amount of work and teach me every day. And I feel a bit of like a fraud syndrome, like I'm not that genuinely committed when I see young people, and then I feel I need to be more committed because I see a lot of that in them. And we also say this, that if we can develop a teleological sort of spirit in kids, meaning belief for a purpose, then make them passionate for a cause, and then they're less likely to get into trouble, then they're more focused. So I see that in a lot of my students
today. That's very interesting. So Veera, let's now come to American Embassy School. I mean, you've taught there for a little over 2 decades. It is in one of the best international schools in the world. And you teach the International Baccalaureate program. How is IB different from the other systems in India?
So I'm a great believer in the baccalaureate system because it inculcates critical thinking skills. And for example, in history, students write essays where they defend an argument, but there's no right or wrong answer. So long as they can give evidence with analysis and some historiography, they can get the highest range of marks. Also, it's not 80 or 90%. It's kind of a range. It's on a scale of 1 to 7. Mm. But it really generates critical thinking. And my own, I have 2 sons, one who did the IB and one who didn't. And eventually, it all works out okay. But the one who did the IB definitely had a head start in college because he could write much better research papers and so on. So the IB does it right. Mm.
And is that why so many more schools in India are now beginning to offer IB?
Yes, because they're recognizing that this is the way to go. There's no point having a mark scheme with fixed answers where students are just expected to, by rote, write on paper. They should be able to think and argue for themselves. And the whole system, in our traditional system often, which is changing now, but the mind is like a blank box. And that the teacher can just fill in what and the student should learn, but it doesn't work that way. The student is not perceiving it the same way that the teacher is thinking. In fact, my favorite lines from Salman Rushdie in his book, Joseph Anton, it says the lessons that students learn in school are not the lessons that the school thinks they're teaching them. So they're learning something different. And so the IB is saying, learn how you want, so long as you can defend it.
Very nice. So moving on now, India has a very, very old traditional educational system. And yet, IB is making a big difference. What is the difference that you see between the way you teach in AES and the way a private school teaches in India?
So I think definitely private schools are trying to inculcate new systems. There are a lot of schools I know in Delhi and Gurgaon that are experimental schools that are introducing these new systems like the IB teachers. Not in all, because I don't know, there are different kinds of pressures, class sizes are large. But I do want to say, for example, currently there's a stress on social emotional learning. So it's not that important what the marks students get, but we need to look after their social and emotional behavioral aspects. And I find that Delhi schools are, even the government schools, like I happened to be at a conference where Mr. Sisodia was there, and he has introduced quiet spaces in all government schools. He has introduced meditation based on the Dalai Lama's teachings. And that's making a difference. I met a mother from one of the government schools that said earlier her son used to be far more intolerant and come and start shouting after school. And now he asks her, have you eaten food? Why are you always working in the kitchen? So those differences are being made. So it'll take a long time, but I think some enlightened governments and people who focus on education can bring about that difference. And I think it'll come in India.
So again, you know, if you look at literacy in India, literacy has increased from 50% in the 50s to 82% today. India is also producing a very, very large number of graduates, who, some of whom go out and do really well. When you talk about some of the top CEOs in the world, they're all people who studied in the Indian system. What is India doing right? And what could India do differently?
So I think, I don't know if this is a sort of prejudicial statement to make, but I think the Indian gene system is good. You know, the strong genes produce kids who are bright. And because of the numbers and competition, you know, students get more competitive, they have to work harder, and they learn to adjust. I think Indian students are resilient, and so no matter what system they come from, they do well abroad. But I think we should definitely introduce, I think literacy is just the ability to read or write, not to code or decode. And that's the difference. That's when you start coding or decoding or thinking critically, that will make the difference. Yes.
So let me go back before I move into the next segment, you know, a little bit about JNU. And, you know, you worked with some of the biggest names, including Professor Bipin Chandra, I think, who was your guide. What was it like to work with such iconic names? And what were some of your learnings from them?
Yeah, it was like a whole new world opened, having grown up in a protected environment, studied in Bombay. Done my bachelor's and master's in Bombay, came to JNU because I wanted to work on modern Indian history, and then I wanted to work with Dr. Bipin Chandra, though there was no guarantee that he would be my guide. But I came to JNU. I felt like people judged me because they thought Bombay people are more like socially aware but not so academic, and I felt I had to work that much harder. But fortunately, I got recognized by Dr. Bipin Chandra, and he, in fact, said that he would like me to work with him on the political thought of the moderate nationalist. Just completely brilliant. Bipin Chandra, Romila Thapar, Dr. Gopal, so many names, Majid Siddiqui, Dr. Bhattacharya, just brilliant people. I used to just sit in class awestruck as a 21-year-old. Couldn't believe that there could be so much brilliance. And also the people, the colleagues, my own colleagues in class, they were quite brilliant. I used to feel like I'm way behind them. But I worked hard.
Fantastic. So let's move to your new avatar, which is, you know, you're a great believer in community service and recycling. I know they're not related, but I'm asking you the same question. Talk to me about the work you do in community service.
So I feel like I've now got very involved in community service, but I wasn't born to serve. And I kind of got into it because we needed to do extracurricular activities at American school where I teach. And so I was looking and I felt like, okay, what can I do? And there was paper wastage, and I said I could start a recycling club. But I feel a little like I just chose it because I needed to do something. So I got passionate later. I feel a little like Jinnah when I teach history. I mean, I feel like Jinnah didn't form the Pakistan movement. He kind of just followed it. He needed a goal. He was the right man at that time. And he said, okay, let me do this. You know, he'd come back from England. His wife had died. He was looking for a purpose and he got led into it. And then now we say he was the man who created Pakistan and so on. But I just recycling, I wasn't a recycler, I would waste paper myself. But that option came that I needed to start something. And then I started studying a lot and I realized the value. But community service, yes, I'm a great believer. I think if young people, and I had mentioned this before, can be made passionate for a cause, then a lot of problems they face will disappear because then they get so involved in it. My own children, they would go to the mobile creches as young children. They would teach other children and find it so rewarding. So I keep telling students, once you get involved, it's like not for the other person, it's service to you, because the benefits to you are immense. So yeah, I'm I can go on about community service because I feel every young person should be do meaningful community service and it should be voluntary. I've always said if you force it, then it's not, it doesn't happen in the in a productive way.
And let's talk about your passion for recycling. I mean, you know, whether it's plastics or paper, you know, or even waste at home. I think there's a lot that you keep doing about all this. What drives you to do focus so much?
Yeah, so once I got involved in recycling, then I did a lot of research, then I found out a lot. And of course, I said we should begin at home. So I started composting at home. I would separate all the wet waste. And then I love gardening too. So it's like a plus for me. So I'm separating the waste. I'm making it into compost, which is khad, which I fertilizer, which I use for my plants. And then I'm saving so much garbage. And so we talked about this in the community I live. And there were others who are very interested too. So now in Lebanon, where I live, everybody separates waste and we generate our own fertilizer, which then we share with the community. And just if everybody would do that, we do a lot of work in school also. We do composting, we separate plastic and paper and so on, which is really the need of the day. It's essential.
And I guess if this becomes a movement around the world, hopefully the pollution of all of the seas and oceans and waters and everything else will come to us.
Absolutely, if everybody recognizes that, yeah. But like even staff at home now, so many people I feel get influenced because first you teach your own staff, then they tell others, then they go home and save. So I feel like even if 100 people have got influenced because of the composting I do, that has a spiraling effect.
That's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about gender balance. I mean, you know, you have strong views and you often said that, you know, your mother brought you and your twin brother up as absolute equals, and which was absolutely incredible for a lady of her generation. You have been a great believer in gender balance as well. Women are excellent multitaskers. How do they manage to do so many tasks while having a busy schedule like you do and keep running all the time?
So, yes, I think women are able to parallel process because of the kind of roles they play. And I always say for the most part, and I again, it'll sound stereotypical, but I believe men are more tunnel vision because they're told, you know, you have to grow up and you work and you pick up your briefcase and you go. But women are doing these so many roles, like every day I go to work, but I'm stopping at the vegetable shop. Then in the morning, I'm trying to see what the house needs. Then you have to entertain. So you learn to multitask. And I think education helps with that too. So you talk about gender balance. And my favorite quote is really that education of the girl child is critical because when you educate a man, you just educate a person, but when you educate a woman, you educate the whole family. So it's critical. Like I would say, because I work so much with NGOs and with children, I help with a program called Teach India After School. And so these children come in, some of them will not come with shoes because they say the brother got the shoes, not the daughter, the sister. And that's like really disturbing to me. And I think the more we all work on this, educated men and women, the better our society will be.
So before I move to a few personal questions, I know you love traveling and you travel to some 75, 80 countries around the world. What do you look for when you select a new destination to travel to?
So I like scenic beauty, but I look for more than that. So just scenic beauty or just a beach doesn't satisfy me. And again, because of my history background, I want to know more about the place, where the people come from, why they behave the way they do. Sort of anthropological in a sense. And just travel widens your horizons. And I just can't, I mean, to me, it's the experiences that bring us happiness, right? It's well proven that it's not money and so on. And what better experience than travel? So yeah, I get a high like nothing else when I travel. Just learning about new places and new cultures.
So a quick question on your travel. Which would be some of your favorite destinations that you've been to?
That is so tough because I think I've been to close to 70 countries and I just see something nice in all of them. If it's a Cambodia, it's all the history there. If it's New Zealand, it's just absolutely scenic and beautiful. And then I can't think offhand.
Okay.
I would need to think a little more. But yeah, I love Africa too. Mm. It sort of creeps under your skin. Mm. And I mean, there's so many countries in Africa, but
yeah.
I would say South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya.
So let's move on. You know, I want to talk about two of your interests. You know, you're a classical singer, and you think you've been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah.
What is it that you know, what does classical music give to you?
Again, I think one is the career, which satisfies one part of our interest, but just having hobbies and building upon them. So I feel a great sense of calm and serene. I look forward to it. I go for my music class once a week. I'm not even very good at it. I feel embarrassed when you say 30 years because I should be really at a high level. But it's just that I so enjoy it. I go into a different zone. I come away feeling like completely relaxed and happy. So music, and my greater hobby these days is bridge.
Yeah.
And so I enjoy playing bridge. Mm. I like to challenge myself. My children always tease me. They say, "Mom, are you crazy? You always want to learn. You always, if I can go for a conference where I learn something." But bridge also, I like to challenge myself. So one is the regular. I've switched two or three conventions over the years because you get comfortable in a zone, and then you say, okay, I'll just play this convention. So I'll learn a new convention and play to that.
So, you know, you are a very, very avid reader and you're a historian. Have you ever thought of writing a book?
So I love reading. I can't imagine a time when I wouldn't have a few books, sometimes 7 or 8 at my bedside. Not that I'm reading that much, but they're always there. I get nervous if I don't have a book at hand. But I'm not I don't have a very good writing style.
Mm.
I often tell this to, I like reading, but I don't write that well. And so when I grade some of my students' essays, I can teach them how to write, but I can't write like them. So sometimes I say, "This is brilliant. How did you write it? I couldn't write like this. I can train you to write." But no, I think I don't have a very good writing style. I don't have the patience or the, I have been asked to write some books for the IB, but it doesn't interest me that much.
And yet you go and set the IB paper and you correct IB papers.
But I don't feel, I know even when I do some basic writing, I don't feel it's of the quality that, you know, it should be.
Okay. So moving on, over the years, have you had any people who've had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what has that taught you?
So it would be so difficult because I feel everybody teaches you something and they all add value to your life. And you know, I read a lot of spiritual books too. So I feel like nothing happens without a purpose. So many people, but I would have to say I would begin with my mother because she had a great influence on me because she trusted me. And always she went at a time when girls were, you know, I had a twin brother, so there were lots of boys at home and we would go out, and my mother would never even ask me. All the other people would be asked, "What time will you come? What do you do?" But she had so much faith and trust in me. And I believe that if you trust people, then the other person that won't let you down. And besides that, you've already mentioned that she always said, "I have a twin brother in me," but she said, "You must study, you must, because your brother will anyway study, he'll anyway be expected to get a job, but it's so important that you have a job and you be independent." So my mother, in many ways that I could not express, and I feel I miss her a lot because she passed away a few years ago, but she had a great influence. Mm-hmm. I would say you've already mentioned Dr. Bipin Chandra because he taught me a whole new world, like a whole new way of thinking. And in more recent times, my director for 13 years at the American School, Bob Hedsel, he's just an amazing person who just kind and compassionate, sees the best in everybody, brings out the best in us. So these are the people who would stand out as.
So, you know, what would be 3 adjectives that define you?
I think brave. I think I'm brave and courageous. And sometimes, you know, my name is Veera and it comes from the root word veer, which means brave. And sometimes I wonder, like the namesake, whether you take on that role. But mm-hmm. I am brave. I am tireless mm-hmm. and hardworking. I just keep going. Sometimes I feel like I wish I could relax a little more. I think I'm restless too. And I'm trying to work on it. I'm restless. I'm not a relaxed person. And so when I see people around, just can relax or watch TV, or I just feel I should be doing something. And so I'm working on it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. So, you know, a few more questions. When was the last time you did something for the first time?
So that's something I ask my students. And I would say I want to keep doing something. I can't remember a specific incident, but I learned line dancing. Mm. I tried to do scuba diving, but the doctor said that you're a blood pressure patient, you should. But I'll do anything that I can get my hands on. But I learned a new convention in bridge. I think that's very recent. So that would be the...
Okay. So the next question would be on failure. And, you know, most people in our country, or for that matter, Asia, don't teach children that it's okay to fail. And yet we fail all the time. What have been some of your learnings from your mistakes or your failures?
So I feel so blessed that I feel like I have failed often at personal things, but it's not been when I think like, what did I fail at or what it, but yes, I would maybe focus more on mistakes, because I've definitely made some mistakes. If I had to live life again, I would live it differently. I'm impulsive. I tend to leap before I look. And so that's, I think, a mistake. I think we should think carefully, weigh pros. I speak before I think, I act before I think. And so, for example, I'll just rush into, because I'm so keen to travel, when I went into the Rocky Mountains in Colorado, I just, with a colleague, we just hired a car, not knowing the routes, nothing. And then the fog came in and we were stuck for a few hours. So I don't think, with my younger son once, when we were in Kota Kinabalu, we just went, both of us, into the South China Sea and just were doing snorkeling. And then later we heard those were, areas infected with pirates and so on. So I think I need to think before I act.
So my final question, in a life so well lived and so successful, do you have any regrets?
Yeah, I think it would be not normal for people to not have regrets. I do have a few regrets. I mentioned before, I would have liked to live my life differently. I would have liked to be a kinder and more compassionate person earlier. Mm-hmm. Now I've learned it, but I feel like I could have done that better. Yeah.
Veera, thank you very much. It's been an absolute honor to have you on our show. And I just wish you much, much more multitasking, many, many more countries to see, and some incredible success at Bridge. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.